Panel meeting on Tuesday, the 14th of December, 2021. The time is 2:03 p.m. My name is Heather Wharton, and I'm the chair of the panel today. I'm joined by expert panel members John McInerney and Mary Lynn Taylor, and the community representative Kath Roach. Firstly, the acknowledgement of country. I acknowledge the Gadigal and Wangal people of the Eora Nation, on whose country we're meeting today, and their elders past and present, and I'm located on the Wangal lands. I will introduce myself and then ask the other panel members to give a brief outline of their background and experience. I'm a town planner of over 35 years. I'm self-employed as a consultant and I work mainly for state and local government. I was the community rep on this panel for the previous term, as well as being an alternative chair for this panel. I'm also an alternative chair and an expert member of a number of other local panels, and I'm a member of the Sydney South Regional Planning Panel. Over to John.
Yes, thanks, Chair. My name is John McInerney, and I'm an architect and town planner. I am also the past Deputy Lord Mayor at the City of Sydney and have been on this particular panel from the very beginning, back in the Leichhardt days. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, John. Mary Lynn?
Mary Lynn Taylor. I'm a planning lawyer of many years, and I act for both councils and applicants in the Land and Environment Court, and I have been on these planning panels since their inception. Thank you.
Thanks, Mary Lynn. And Kath?
Thanks, Chair. Kath Roach from my company, Sync Solutions. I work across a number of local councils in New South Wales, predominantly in the governance and conduct areas. I previously was also engaged as a executive director of Housing New South Wales for a number of years, also as the interim ombudsman at Sutherland Shire Council for 5 years. On this particular panel, I'm acting as the community representative.
Thank you, Kath. Thank you, panel. We have 7 development items on the agenda today, and we need to record if there are any declarations of interest. I understand that there are none, but could the panel members please confirm that, John?
No declaration of interest.
Mary Lynn?
Yes, I have no declaration of interest to make in any matter today.
Thank you. And Kath?
No declarations of interest. Thank you, Chair.
And I have no conflicts to declare either. Thanks. We will now hear from the registered speaker for each item. We have registered speakers for items 2, 3, 6, 7 and 8. Each speaker will have 3 minutes to address the panel. We've received a copy of all the written submissions, so you do not have to repeat your whole submission, but you should focus on the main issues. We have also accepted submissions received yesterday from objector for item 6 and for the applicant from item 8, both of whom are registered to speak. Speakers for the applicant will follow the objectors and should try and address any issues raised by the objectors. At the end of the speakers, the public part of the meeting will be closed and the panel will deliberate in closed session, and the decisions on the applications will be published online within a week. And please note that this meeting is being recorded, the audio is being recorded. And also, when you're not speaking, could you please ensure that your camera is off and also that you have placed yourself on mute. Thanks very much. Now for the first application item on the agenda, which is item 2, which is DA 2021-0491, Unit 8, 28 Gower Street, Summerhill, for the enclosure of the balcony. We have one speaker being the applicant, Mr. Warwick Sinclair. Mr. Sinclair, are you there? I can see you. Mr. Sinclair? Hello, Mr. Sinclair. You're up first to speak.
Unmute, yeah, okay. Oh. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, thank you.
Yes. Thank you.
Sorry, could you just record your name and address, please, and then you can start your 3 minutes. Thank you.
Yes, my name is Warwick Sinclair, and my wife and I are clearly in support of the application. The assessor's comments re-streetscape, bulk, additional floor space are a collection of generic statements that do not address the attributes of the proposal described in the photographs, etc., that were part of the submission. A streetscape drawing was not considered necessary, nor was one requested by the council. We therefore reject the criticisms raised. There is no change to the height, form, or textures of the materials, and proportions and configurations are consistent with the existing design. There is no extension beyond the existing brickwork or curtilage of the building. The additional floor space is insignificant and does not increase the bulk of the building. There is therefore no change nor addition that would negatively impact the streetscape or community. The existing design is actually in breach of parts 4H and 4J of the apartment design guide in that noise suppression has not been provided. Application of that guide to the proposal is therefore flawed in that no recognition is made of part 4J, which promotes the enclosure of balconies for use as winter gardens to suppress noise. Enclosure of the balcony will comply with the NCC, inclusive of abundant light throughout the apartments and ventilation, which will actually be improved by the ability to selectively open windows to limit noise to occupied areas. The open balcony is really a design flaw. However, future enclosure is clearly envisaged due to the solid balustrade and the simplicity of installing windows. Balconies to units 7, 14 and 21 are already enclosed, even though their exposure to the noise is far less than ours. Children will not currently sleep with the door to bedroom 2 open, but with the addition of windows, a sense of safety will prevail. In conclusion, the facts are that the enclosure of the balcony will suppress the unwelcome noise, retain ample light into all rooms and areas, improve the real ventilation, blend seamlessly into the existing building fabric, improve the quality of life for the occupants, have virtually no impact on other properties or persons. The proposal received overwhelming support at the Strata AGM, and council has received no objections. Refusal of the application would not be in the interests of the owners of the, or the community. We call on the panel to approve this application.
Thank you, Mr. Sinclair, and very good timing as well. Any questions from the panel?
Yes, please. May I ask a question?
Certainly.
Yes.
Yes. Mr. Sinclair, what is the type of noise you are trying to keep out?
Okay, we are right on the corner of Gower Street and Liverpool Road, about 200 metres up from Parramatta Road. Since we've moved here, the super ambulance station has been put into effect and we regularly get ambulances coming up the street. There's a set of lights on our corner and they turn into an alarm system as they approach the lights. So that was not evident when we bought. There are two things that are highlighted in the apartment design guide. One is that we're underneath the flight path for aircraft leaving Sydney Airport, and we are on a very busy road. We very often get B doubles going up the street, and starting from the lights, they create a lot of noise. So this is a continual problem, and it's only got worse since we've been here, even though there's been a lockdown and a little bit of less impact at times, the noise is still quite significant.
Thank you.
John?
Yes, Madam Chair. I was wondering if I could get a comment from council staff regarding the existing sound or noise suppression that's built into the building.
Certainly. My understanding at the moment is that the windows in the dwelling are double glazed, and that is how acoustic attenuation has been addressed. So that acoustic attenuation refers to the apartment itself, not to outdoor space.
Yes. Thanks, Madam Chair.
Yes, thanks, Kath.
Through you, Madam Chair. You mentioned that the balconies 7, 14 and 21 are already enclosed. What street do they face? Do they face Liverpool Road or do they face Gower Street?
They face Liverpool Road. They're on the opposite side of the building to us. They're on the western side of our building. So they don't get the impact from the streetlights and the vehicles coming up so much. It's a disappearing noise that they would be subjected to rather than approaching noise.
Thanks, Mr. Sinclair.
I just have one question as well, thanks. So the noise that you're trying to control, is it when you're sitting on the balcony or is it inside the unit itself?
Well, at the moment, we have to keep most of the doors closed. We can manipulate the ventilation by keeping some open where we're not occupying the room. For example, our main bedroom and the air filters through. But in putting the windows in will allow us a much more flexible approach to that. The noise coming is directly into the living space, so that door is invariably closed. We like to sit out on the balcony of a summer's evening and we find we're continually interrupted by loud noise and we can't enjoy a quiet meal out there, which the windows will allow us to do that. I suffer from a hearing loss and tinnitus, and I find it very distressing and not getting any better with my age. I'll be 78 in a couple of weeks' time, so it's not getting any better, and my hearing seems to affect and somehow increase the volume as I'm intensely concentrating on what people are saying, and it seems to increase the volume of what I hear when a siren goes past. The audio people call it recruitment of hearing, and it's some sort of increase in your ability to hear, just to concentrate.
Okay, thank you so much, Mr. Sinclair. Are there any other questions from the panel?
Thank you, Mr. Sinclair.
We'll be considering your issues and the council officer's report, and the results will be up on the website in a few days or within a week.
Thank you very much, Chair.
On to item 3, which is DA 2021-655 at 110 Prospect Road, Summerhill, for the Torrens Title subdivision of a dual occupancy. There is one speaker, Mr. Joseph Chan, who I understand speaking on behalf of the applicant. Is Mr. Chan there, please?
Yep. Hi, can anyone hear me?
Yep, you're all good, a little bit muffled, but yep.
Yep, sounds good. All right, dear panel members, I'm Joseph Chan. I represent the applicant Corona Projects. So the applicant has been engaged by the owner of the subject site to prepare a DA for Torrens Title subdivision of an existing dual occupancy.
Mr. Chan, Madam Chair, I can only just hear Mr. Chan. I'm wondering if he can move closer or try and alter it a bit. Sorry, Mr. Chan.
You are a bit muffled.
Yep. Is it better now?
Yes.
Yeah, even a little bit closer. No?
Right, I'll see if there's anything I can do. Give me a second.
You don't have headphones? No?
No.
Okay.
That's right. It might be fine if he talks closer and just talks a bit louder. That might help.
Okay, just take it slowly too, please. Thank you.
Yep, sure. I will start again. Okay, cool. So I'm Joseph Chan and I represent the applicant Corona Projects. So the applicant has been engaged by the owner of the subject property to prepare a DA for Torrens Title subdivision of an existing dual and to carry out minor rectification works to meet the proposed subdivision line at 110 Prospect Road, Summerhill. So today I'll address the issues raised during the assessment, including the variance to minimal lot size and the use of building as a dual occupancy. So the first issue relates to the variance to the minimal lot size as outlined by the actual LUP. So the subject site has an area of 787 square meters with a street frontage of 17.22 meters to Prospect Road. The proposal creates two identical lots with a lot size of 393.65 square meters and a street frontage width of 8.61 meters. The actual LUP outlines that the minimal lot size is 500 square meters, and therefore the proposal results in a 21.27% variation into the development standard and a non-compliance of 106.35 square meters. However, as the applicant, we suggest that the non-compliance is susceptible as the proposal does not involve any building works on site, save for the minor alteration to the existing toilet to rectify the past construction error and to align the building to meet the proposed subdivision line. The proposed rec is not considered to have any unreasonable impact to the contributory item. Instead, it should be supported by council as it restores the building back to a symmetrical pair. The proposal maintains the existing development pattern as it follows the location of party wall and bisects the site into two equal lots. The proposal is compatible with the locality as the proposed lot have a narrow lot width and a greater lot depth. As such, given that the compliance with the minimal lot size is impossible as the building has been constructed 100 years ago, merit shall be given to the non-compliance and the proposal should be accepted by the panel. The second issue relates to the use of building as a dual occupancy. A search on council archives returns no past records of any application lodged for the construction of dual occupancy or conversion of single dwelling to a dual for the site. However, dual and semi-detached dwellings are permissible under the actual LUP, and therefore the proposal is considered to be permissible as it can rely on the current dual use for the purposes of pursuing a Torrens title subdivision. In summary, the current building visually presents as two dwellings with two street numbers. The building has been located at the corner of Prospect Road and Herbert Street for at least 100 years. The dual occupancy use has never ceased and the site has been occupied since the day it was constructed. The proposal is considered to have minimal and reasonable impacts to the site and to the Summerhill locality. It is concluded that the compliance with minimal lot size outlined under the LDP is unreasonable and we ask the panel to approve the application with conditions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chan. Any questions from the panel?
Mr. Chan, I assume you're happy with the recommendation in the officer's report, is that correct?
Yes.
Thanks.
Mary Lynn?
And the conditions, Mr. Chan, are they acceptable?
Yes, they are acceptable.
Thank you.
No questions from me.
I just have a question regarding the party wall. Does it extend through to the roof? Like, is it all the way into the roof?
Not to the photos. I believe it extends up to the roof.
Will you be lodging a construction certificate for any of the works?
Yes, the construction certificate is conditioned by the DA.
Right, and so what are the works that need a construction certificate?
Yeah, so basically, currently, this toilet at number 110 Prospect Road. So that toilet encroaches the proposed subdivision line by a bit. So the proposed work is to cut the toilet back so it will fit within the proposed lot.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Any other questions, panel?
No, thanks.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks very much, Mr. Chan.
Thank you.
The decision will be up on the website. We're debating it after the meeting in closed session. Thank you. The next item is item 4, DA 2021-0779 at 78-80 Dalhousie Street, Haberfield, for three new building identification signs for the Haberfield Centre and Library. There are no speakers. This is a council DA. There are no speakers. Is that no one's here for that item? No? Okay, thank you. Then we'll move on to item 5, which is DA 2020-21-390 at 51 Railway Parade, Marrickville, for alterations and additions to an existing building for use as an entertainment facility. Again, we have no registered speakers for this item. Is there anyone here to speak on the Marrickville item? Okay. Then moving along to item 6. Item 6 already. DA 2021-480 at 2 Lachlan Street, Roselle, for the demolition of an existing cottage and construction of a new three-level residence with parking. We have two objectors and the applicant, who's the architect, to speak. So firstly, we'll hear from the objector, Mr. John Muscat. Mr. Muscat, are you there? Mr. Muscat, is he on the screen or can we see him? Maybe we'll move on to the second objector, Mr. Patrick Bulas?
Reynolds. Yeah, Reynolds may be easier, Madam Speaker.
Okay.
It is my maiden name, but I've been married since and it's been updated. It's okay. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, great. Thank you. Could you state your name? Well, you've given us our name, but your address and start your 3 minutes, please.
Sure. It's 1 Joseph Street, Roselle. And I would just like to begin to make the statement that privacy is probably our main concern with this development. We're not objected to any demolition or anything like that or any upgrades. It's legitimately just the privacy concerns that we've raised a number of times, and I believe we've seen some clarifications and conditions in the submitted details for this particular application. Our biggest issue is the balcony on the northern side of the property. Originally, we believe that this may have been requested by council to be set back even further, and we have not seen any amended plans to clarify that, and believe it is reinstated as proposed, with the only condition being privacy screening along that particular northern balcony. We want to make sure that we have details or clarification as to materials being used for the privacy screening and size of the privacy screening as well. The other piece that we believe council may have missed around the private open spaces at the rear of the property, there's an area that looks into our living room as per the current proposed plans, and there's no privacy screening allocated for that particular balcony. So we just want to make sure that there is a condition in place for any privacy concerns to make sure that they are accounted for. And the final one is around the air conditioning units, which in the last update to plans had been mentioned that they would be on the northern side of the property near our garage. We're requesting the air conditioning units be placed away from the northern boundary, which is our neighbouring wall, and placed elsewhere, either to the eastern side or southern side of the property. That is it. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Questions from the panel?
John, Mr. McInerney, I think, are you speaking? Because you're on mute.
Oh, John.
Sorry, I cannot see anybody other than Madam Speaker.
That's better, John.
Yes, I was wondering, Madam Chair, whether we might ask the architect to address those matters when he, apparently we have him before us.
I'd
be happy to hear the architect's response.
Okay. Yeah, that's a great idea.
Sorry, Madam Chair. John Muscat's actually just joined.
Oh,
so
okay.
I don't know if you wanted to.
We will. We'll just check if there's any more questions for Mr. Reynolds. Kath?
No, not at the moment. Thanks, Mr. Reynolds. Okay. I'd like to hear from the architect in particular also on the air conditioning aspect as well.
Okay. So we'll move to Mr. Muscat. Sorry, we missed you first time round, but could you please start your submission to the panel, please? If you're here, Mr. Muscat.
Oh, I did admit him.
Oh. Hello, Mr. Muscat. If you're there, we're up to your item. We've just heard from your neighbour, who's also an objector, and then we're going to hear from the architect. So we'd like to hear your submission.
Sorry, Madam Chair, he's not showing up in the list now, but I did admit him, so I'm not sure.
Oh, okay. Could we see his actual name? He's on here now.
No.
Okay. Well, we do have his written submission. I'm not sure if he put in an extra submission as well anyway.
Yeah.
All right, we'll move to Mr. Stevens, and if perhaps Mr. Muscat turns up, we can ask him if there's anything to add. So we have Mr. Ray Stevens, I understand, is speaking for the applicant. Mr. Stevens?
Thank you for the opportunity to address the panel. I'd like to thank Council's planning officers for this rather unusual application. I think they've done a difficult job given the issue of existing use rights. In regard to the comment about the privacy screens, we believe that the conditions that Council imposed are reasonable, and we can work with those to assure privacy. In regard to the air conditioning, I think, again, Council standard conditions apply, as well as the Noise Abatement Act, that the units will comply in that regard. I did also raise in a submission the issue of the ceiling heights being conditioned to 2.4, and I think you've probably, hopefully you've read that, but I would just add, could you imagine going back 100 years to the original owners of the house and suggest to them that it's reasonable to live with ceiling heights that are 2.4 metres? I mean, 3 metres is a standard height, or 10-foot ceilings, 11-foot was common also. But to reduce the ceiling heights in a new house to 8 metres, 8 foot or 2.4, really, to my mind, is unreasonable. Move forward 100 years and imagine talking to the owners of the house who say, why are these ceilings so low? And then somebody would have to say, well, council believed that was a reasonable height to impose on a new house. I would also ask the panel members, do any of you live in a house that has 2.4 metre ceilings in the bedrooms? Council planners often put this condition in, and I think in many cases it may be reasonable where there's issues of blocking views and overshadowing, but in this case it's an industrial site, it's not a conservation area, and that the heights, as council have said, are consistent with the heights of the adjoining factory and showrooms. So I would say 2.7 really is a minimum height. We have that as a minimum height if this was considered a unit. The planning codes for apartments consider 2.7 reasonable. So I really don't see the need to lower the ceilings to really compromise this house for the next 150 years that it's going to be in place. So I just ask the panel to delete that section of the proposed conditions.
Okay, great, thank you. Questions from the panel?
Yes, Madam Chair. I assume, Mr. Stevens, that you're talking of both the ceiling heights, because the council's proposing a 300 mil drop in both of the ceilings.
Just the level for the bedrooms.
Just the bedrooms.
Just the bedrooms. We can live because we've got a raked ceiling on the upper floor, but just the impressive height of 2.4 for the bedroom. So, you know, we would be looking to drop at 300.
Right.
With that part B of the condition.
Yeah. So in effect, the ridgeline, if I could put it that way, drops by 300 only.
Yes. Correct. Yes.
Okay. Thanks. Look, just one other quick one. You heard the objector asking if the air conditioning apparatus can be moved to the southern side of the site. Is that possible without too much problem?
We're pretty much built along the boundary of the southern boundary. The only location is down on the street where there's actually historically a very weird right of way. That would be the ideal location to put it, but actually I don't think we can put it in the right of way. It could be put on maybe an upper floor.
Above the right of way?
Okay. A right of way typically is for 2.4 yes, clearance, correct. But that would be a wonderful location if possible.
Without asking you to do it on the run, if we were to request or condition that the air conditioning units be moved to the southern side of the site, you might be able to find a solution for it then.
Yes, I believe we could.
Okay, thanks.
Through you, Mr. Chair. Thanks, Mr. McInerney, as well. And Mr. Stevens, I do note on two of the plans on drawing number, and I'll just do the in part, .16/D, and on the two parts to that one, that the air conditioning is actually already over the right of way. There's a little air conditioning sign there in both of those drawings for that section for point 16D on the southern side of the development. So that might be, I'll just check the other air conditioning ones as we go through, but there's certainly some already there on the right of way.
Yes. Look, at if it is conditioned that way, we certainly will be getting legal advice about doing that now. It's a right of footway. Yeah. And it's no longer used, incidentally, either. So it's
that's what I was actually just about to ask, Mr. Stevens. So it's actually a non-used right of way as such.
In fact, my client has tried to negotiate with the owner to buy it, but with no success. But it's a right of way to nowhere.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Stevens. I was wondering what it was actually a right of way to. So thank you. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. Could I just ask about the screening of any balconies or areas facing north? I think the objectors referred to one area that wasn't screened, but
that was the westerly. I think it was the westerly end of that northern balcony, Madam Chair. Right,
and wasn't that subject to a condition?
Well, if I may say, that balcony was never meant to be a balcony. It was a planter, so it was inaccessible. But for assurance, to make sure that sometime in the future they're not going to pull the plants out and use it as a balcony, then the conditions would be acceptable to block that off.
Okay, so there's no screening.
Or condition it to be non-accessible.
I think that's already, there's definitely remove it is something in the recommended conditions.
Yeah.
Take away the planting.
Well, it has to be a concrete slab to close off the room below, so there has to be a roof to it.
Right.
We're just proposing to put planting on top, but it was never intended to be a balcony.
Okay, so I guess people don't want it accessible, or the conditions require it not to be accessible and the balustrade to be removed. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sorry, Madam Chair, just one other thing.
Yeah.
I think also the point is, though, that on the terrace, the western side of the terrace on the northern part leads to the plant, leads is the wrong word, but in essence looks over the planter area. I think that's an area of the screening also, from my understanding, Madam Chair. So, Mr. Stevens, I think could you just refer to that point? If you need the reference documents, point 18D on the map there.
Well, if there's a concern about that leading to people looking back, then that screen could return across in line with door 7.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Stevens. That's the logical approach. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, great, thanks. Mary Lynn, any queries?
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. Now, thanks, Mr. Stevens. Now, did we have Mr. Muscat, the other objector, come back? Or arrive? Any sign of him, Claire?
No, unfortunately, he doesn't seem to be here.
All right, then, as I said, we did, I think, receive another submission from him, so that's all good, I hope. Then the next item is, I've just lost my place now.
Seven.
Item seven. Item 7, thank you, DA 2021-0703 for 53-55 Waratah Street, Haberfield, which is the fit out and use of a building as a cafe, including construction works. There are three speakers for this item, two objectors and the applicant's town planner. The first speaker we have is a Mr. David Hazelwood. And we can see him here, Mr. Hazelwood. Thank you. Could you give us your, we know your name, your address, please.
My address is 59 Waratah Street.
And your three minutes is starting now.
Starting now. Thank you. Thanks, Madam Chair. Look, my major concern with this, as I expressed in the original objection, there's probably three. One is certainly parking. And parking is a major issue in this area. So we're talking a residential street where we have a general store, we have an existing cafe, and we have a butcher. Now, there are there's a couple of shorter term parking, 15 minute parking zones, but I struggle to find parking out the front of my house or in the near vicinity on weekends as things are. If you go and add another high turnover, high traffic business, which is the only way this business is going to make money into that area, the parking situation is going to be exacerbated. And I know I'm a frequent attendee at the Hungry Grasshopper Cafe. I know the clientele there. There's a lot of locals, but a lot of people drive to get there. Same with the general store. So that's certainly going to be an issue. I'm concerned about the delivery process and how that's proposed to work. I've got no idea how they believe they can transport goods down to the back of the property for deliveries, because the driveway there is narrow, it's rough, and certainly inconvenient to be able to get goods down to the back there. So, yeah, already the general store takes deliveries off the street. You see cars and trucks double parked. That just adds to the issues that we've got there as well. So those two issues, and certainly the third one is the fact that, you know, we're in a residential area and you're looking at installing a deep fryer and grill. And certainly the smell from that is something that I'm very concerned about as well. So, you know, they're the main issues that I have. I mean, it is a neighbourhood zoning, so it's a commercial premises, but the sort of development that's being proposed for there, I don't see how it does anything for the amenity given the existing businesses that are in the area. And I can only see how it can add to the traffic and the parking issues.
Okay, thanks very much. Any questions, please?
No, thanks.
No, thanks, Madam Chair.
No, thank you.
Okay, great, thank you. Thanks, Mr. Hazelwood. We have another objector, Ms. Melinda Upton. I can see that she is there.
Good afternoon, Chair and panel. Thank you very much for allowing us to have the opportunity to speak to you. So I'll assume my 3 minutes starts now.
Sure.
I might start with something that David mentioned, and I should, my address is 51 Waratah Street, Haberfield, so directly next door to the proposed application. Just to substantiate the point that David actually made in relation to the parking, if you do have a chance to go back to my original submission, point one, I set out a table there with a number of stats which already highlight the already high traffic volume imposed on the area by reference to the allowed parking and the available parking to the commercial operations, but also the residents in the immediate area. So anyone looking at that would be a little concerned around the congestion, the availability, and the lack of enjoyment in terms of people having access to their residential properties in the area. The second issue I'd like to, so the parking piece is one. The traffic, I think in the submission, there was a statement made that they expect most of the customers to walk to the premises. Given the development that's taken place on City West Link, particularly the opening up of access up Waratah Street from the City West Link and the tunnel, the congestion and the traffic flow has increased significantly in the last couple of years, obviously to accessing the City West Link the light rail, which is down at the end of Waratah Street, acknowledging that that won't be available for the next 18 months due to the carriages concerns that we're all very much aware of. But that again has increased the traffic flow. So the customer base will be not only residents who may walk there, but often on weekends, to again agree with David's point, they do take their own transport and park back and forth away from their Saturday activities, etc. But also those that aren't residents in the area using Waratah Street as an access to the city, given the traffic issues with City West Link or to other public transport, for example, the light rail. So genuine concerns around that, which leads into pedestrian security. We have a long, this is a very much a family suburb, a lot of young children on scooters, on bikes, and the suggestion around the unloading of goods. Again, I have raised in the submission the current owners are already in breach of the consent condition, which was granted when the original, proposal was put through some years ago. I've also added plenty of photos where there's been bread deliveries placed on the front paths. There's been newspaper deliveries. I've not seen at all any access via that small lane in terms of delivery. I've also, the delivery actually at the moment starts around 5:30 in the morning. Leads me to my next point, which is loss of privacy. So my daughter, who is 15, her both bedroom windows face the street together with our bedroom. That's in very close proximity to the proposed development. And given that the cafe is suggesting a maximum of 9 seated customers, this feels to me like very heavy takeaway service where we'll get lots of congregation on the footpath, which will cross over to our immediate area, which is our driveway.
Excuse me, there are some... that's 3 minutes.
Thank you. Wrap it up, please, Ms. Upton.
We'll do. The last thing is in terms of the operating hours, I think the Sunday proposal is unreasonable and not aligned with the Hungry Grasshopper. I think a reasonable proposal would be 8 a.m. if, in fact, the this was being entertained. Currently, it's 7 a.m., which on a Sunday I feel is unreasonable. Thank you very much for your time.
Okay, great. Thank you. Questions? Any questions?
No, thank you.
No, thanks.
Okay, great. So now we'll hopefully hear from Ms. Julia Such for the applicant, who hopefully can talk about some of the issues raised by the objectors. Juliet.
Good afternoon, panel. Thanks for the opportunity to talk to you. I'm a town planner. I'm working with the applicant. And the cafe owners, Joshua Harrison and Sebastian Schumann, are here today, as well as the heritage architect, Richard Schilling, to answer any questions you might have. So we appreciate this opportunity to make the submission and respectfully ask the panel to endorse council's recommendation for approval, subject to the conditions of consent as recommended, all of which we're comfortable with. The council's officer's report is thorough in its assessment of the key issues raised in submissions and in its assessment of potential impact, but I'd like to bring to your attention a typo which identifies the internal seats as proposed as 9. In fact, the plans and the SEA identify the correct number of internal seats proposed is 6. So in addition to the change of use, we're also proposing minor modifications to the front facade. Those have been designed in accordance with documentary evidence and with research of council's files, which turned up a schematic design prepared by council's heritage officer in 2004 after the fire, the building was damaged by fire, which we've used as the basis for our design in consultation with the heritage architect. We believe the site is suitable for the proposed development. It's located within a neighbourhood centre with B1 zoning. It's consistent with the zone objectives, which include to provide a range of small-scale retail, business and community uses that serve the needs of the people who live or work in the surrounding neighbourhood. And in that regard, I would reiterate the point that we've made in our submission and in our application, which is that this is a very small cafe. It's 6 seats only. It's intended to be a neighbourhood use. It was developed and envisaged during COVID and is a response to, I guess, greater working from home and more local opportunities to access small-scale retail such as this. We have a detailed plan of management which seeks to ensure that the new development has regard to the character and amenity of the adjacent and nearby residential areas, and that accords with the zone objectives as well. The proposed development also maintains the historic commercial use of the site, which is important outcome in relation to the conservation area. And the environmental impacts, which are likely as a result of the proposed development, are acceptable as council has identified in their report. So just to quickly respond to the issues of parking and traffic, beyond the walkability of the local neighbourhood, The cafe is within a wide catchment that's underserved by cafes, despite the nearby cafe. And the operators have identified that they think many patrons will walk or cycle, particularly from the regional cycleway and along the foreshore nearby. The use of the cafe with just six seats, we don't think will impact on pedestrian safety and will not have a significant impact on parking. The conditions are generally unchanged in relation to the driveway adjacent. And in terms of deliveries, the driveway, there are two driveways, one on either side. The driveway that is already approved for use for loading and unloading and for staff parking is adequate in its scale and allows vehicles to turn around at the rear and exit in a forward direction. We are expecting two deliveries on average per day, and possibly one waste vehicle. What were the other issues that were raised? Odour, I think, has been addressed. The odour report that we submitted with the DA identifies that the emissions that are expected from the premises without use of a mechanical ventilation system would meet Australian standards. And regardless, we have included a mechanical ventilation system with the requisite odour control. And consequently, we don't believe that there will be concerns in relation to odour once the premises is operating. Regardless, the plan of management includes a complaints handling procedure, which aims to identify and respond to any complaints that are received within 48 hours, and also includes opportunities for review of the plan of management and review of operating procedures over the course of the operations to ensure that any issues as they arise can be dealt with in an ongoing manner. So on that basis, we believe that the proposal has planning merit, and we commend it to the panel and respectfully request you support the council officer's recommendation.
Okay, thank you. There may be questions. John?
Yes, thanks, Madam Chair. Ms. Search, what do you say to the current illegal parking which occurs for delivery vehicles, as we've heard today? It seems that it's the norm to, in fact, park illegally in front of the shop and service the shops currently. Do you intend, or do you think you can resolve that problem?
Well, we will resolve the problem by complying with the conditions of consent on the existing DA and on that proposed, which is to service the proposed development via the rear. The owners will use small vehicles, which will be able to turn around and exit in a forward direction following their delivery and unloading. And so we don't think that there will be an issue of double parking and, as a result, impedance of sight lines along those driveways as a result of this proposed development. And certainly the conditions of consent are able to ensure that. I have seen the pictures, and I note that the truck that is double parked is significantly larger than we propose
to use. Thanks, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Yes. Through you, Chair. I understand how you've submitted it six places, and I note that Councillor Orr said that it was it should be referred to as nine rather than six seating areas. But when I look at the plans, like in particular plan number 04 and plan 05, so in plan 04, there's clearly indicated underneath the bifold window seating area, and that's a bench seat. Plan number 5, bottom right, I'll call it, there's a bench type seat sitting out there, which would indicate to me, and there's other plans as well with similar drawings marked, that it is a bench seat. So for me, it's not a big issue, but to me, it looks clearly more than six people and more like nine people, as has been submitted in the council report. So that's where I drew it from, rather than the actual council report itself. When you look at the drawings itself, it indicates seating area and has a bench seat, which are not identified for individuals in your current drawings. Is there anything in relation to that, Juliet, that I should know about?
Look, not from my perspective. I think Josh and Sebastian are here. Do you, Josh or Sebastian, can you talk to how you are intending to use that space?
Yeah, sure, Julia.
Thank you.
Coming through the, and hi everyone, by the way, Sebastian. Thanks for hearing us today. So going through the planning process and listening to the concerns of the neighbours, we had discussed internally removing three seats which moved parallel to the accessible entryway, which was actually like a lean-to bench with some stools. So we're happy to amend those drawings in alignment with conditions as well, if necessary.
I guess there is, we can see there's a seating area next to the accessible area, but there's a bench hard up against the window, which are bifolds, and then there appears to be three tables. And then when you look on the section as Kath has identified, you can see that there's definitely a bench and tables. So how do the bench and the tables work together? Why wouldn't people be sitting at the tables and people be sitting at the bench? Or why wouldn't you move the seats back and have people at the bench and at the tables?
Sorry, I'm just trying to get that clear in mind. So,
I mean, do you have the council officer's report there, or Juliet?
Yeah,
do you
I've
have
got
the
it here with me.
Report?
Yep.
So it's page 267, which is the drawing, the plan. And we need to clarify how many seats there are.
Mm-hmm. Happy to cap it at six. With the bench itself and the space that it is, it's essentially a 3-meter space. In regards to width. So to have anything more than three people side by side, you'd find that it'd be super, super congested. So we've designed this floor plan so it can be accessible, have a nice flow of customers, and also adhere to the heritage perspective. So in our plans, we allocated absolutely no more than three people side by side on those benches. But if we need to amend those to accurately depict six seated customers within the cafe, we're happy to do so.
Okay, so you're happy for it to be capacity six?
Correct.
The intention was always that it would only be capacity six.
Okay. Sorry, Kath, were you wanting to continue your questions?
I'm just also concerned the driveway has obviously come up as an issue as well in the delivery process, and it's been mentioned obviously by some of the people, and it is in some of the submissions as well. And I know that you said about waste pickup as well, given the size generally of the vehicles, I'm not sure how that's actually going to be possible to go down those driveways, turn around in a waste vehicle and exit in a forward manner. So can you just run me through that?
No, I don't think a waste vehicle would be using that driveway, no. The waste vehicle will come once a week and pick up from the curbside, and I think the conditions require that the waste only go out in an hour in advance or something of that pickup. So the waste vehicle definitely couldn't use that driveway. It's just the small delivery vehicles, which we anticipate to come on average twice a day in the mornings, and that would be the only use of that driveway.
Okay, sorry. Thanks, Juliet, because you just mentioned waste before, and I thought
I beg your pardon. That was my. I confused the issue. I apologise. Thanks for clarifying.
On the drawing, page 265, which is the site analysis plan, the turning area is not apparent. Do you have that drawing there, or the council officer's report, or your site plan drawing?
I don't. I think the site plan drawing doesn't include that. You're right. I don't have it right here, but my recollection. But I do have here what was approved in the original DA, which is where these conditions arose and where the requirement for loading at the rear arose.
Yeah, but I guess this is its own independent DA that would presumably supersede any previous consents, or for this use anyway. It just doesn't appear from your own site plan that there's a turning area in that driveway.
There is a turning area, and I'll see if I can find the plans for the previous DAs and share my screen. Would that help? But similarly, we could maybe what we need to do is amend our plans to show that in the same manner as they have in the previous DA. I had envisaged that council would rely on the previous approval, which conditioned these matters, rather than go through the process of doing this again.
So the previous approvals were with both shops, or is there only one shop?
No, the previous approval was for the mixed-use development, so it was for both shops. and for the two apartments at the rear, and for the use of the side driveway and the rear turning area and parking area. And we submitted this DA because there was a condition of consent in that DA that required use of this shop to be the subject of a further approval. So I had envisaged that the parking and the loading, having been addressed previously, would not need to be addressed again, and that we would comply with those conditions of consent, which are the same, not dissimilar to the conditions that are imposed on this DA.
Okay. Also, the objector mentioned kitchen exhaust or smells and odours. How does, is there a odour exhaust system?
There is a mechanical ventilation, including an odour removal. As I mentioned, the odour report that we submitted with the application identified that without mechanical ventilation, the odours would comply with Australian standards, but we are including the mechanical ventilation anyway. So we expect that the outcome will be better and higher than Australian standards. The mechanical ventilation is screened by the parapet and located at the furthest possible distance from the boundary.
Okay. I just have another question, and possibly Mary Lynn may have some. The issue of, I guess, with only six seats, there must be some reliance, as is suggested, on takeaway trade. How will you control patrons milling around on the footpath, particularly given that the property next door is a house? Is there something that could be or should be in the plan of management, or how is that going to be managed?
So I'll ask Sebastian to talk to that as well. But in principle, the plan of management was amended as a result of the exhibition period, and it now requires staff to take responsibility for managing patron noise on the footpath and ensuring that patrons who are on the footpath are aware of the driveway and the potential, for vehicles, and that they leave the area in an orderly and quiet fashion. And we've proposed some signage to that effect to be erected as well. But the reality is it will be the responsibility of the staff who are on site at the time, in the same manner as outdoor seating is controlled in other commercial zones.
Okay, thank you. Mary Lynn, any further questions?
Yes, I'd just like to ask if you would share your screen and show us the plan that had the parking in the back garden.
Yes, I will. But if you give me one moment, I just need to find it.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I have that plan available here. If it's the side survey, that's what we're looking for.
The side survey will show it, but it's not the approved floor plan. So if you could share that, Sebastian, then I can keep looking.
The width, I'd be interested to see the width of the driveway because it did look quite narrow on site.
Do you have the survey there, Sebastian? Or Josh?
Yep.
Thanks.
This is the original site survey that was provided. If I zoom in for everyone there, this area here is all concrete and parking. And then this access way spans from the dotted line here with a driveway there and an access way to either property as a shared access way. So it's that entire width there.
And the width of that driveway? Does your survey show the width of the driveway?
Best to be an expert on this one.
I can't see it.
Does it have E2? So there's a reciprocal right of way, is it?
Yes. So the driveway services both this property and the adjacent property. Can you just point, Josh, to where the adjacent garage driveway entrance is?
Correct. So this is here. That's the access way. And then there's also here. So there's a wide gate here, wide enough for a car to access this back area. And then there's also a double door entranceway into the back access way of this property too. This is an easement valve, I believe, as part of some sort of shared council property, which was a bit complicated.
Does the survey plan further down show the width of E2 and the width of E3 in square brackets yes. or not?
Possibly. There we go. Is that what you're after?
Sorry, my screen thing's in the way. Oh, it doesn't show the width. It's according to the DP.
Yeah, it's about 3 metres, I think. Just looking at the scale at the bottom, it comes up about between 3 and 4 metres width.
Matt? Initial consent was delivered with the intention to receive 4-ton delivery trucks to be able to pull into the back and turn around. But that includes the width between the two buildings as well.
And I have to apologise. I can't find the stamped plan for that previous DA. I can only find, excuse me, the modification, which doesn't have the site plan in it.
Okay.
But we're certainly able to come back to you with some further details if that assists.
Chair, apologies, but is there a suggestion to maybe out of line in terms of the process, but to visit on site? Because I don't think Mr. McKinney's calculations are that correct. It's very, very narrow. And acknowledging my previous statement where the current owners are not actually using it as per the consent condition in the first place.
The survey will have a scale on it, so that's as probably as good as we get. We don't need, the survey is accurate, so we can just, if someone, does the council, we'll ask the council officers, presumably this was lodged with the DA, the survey?
Yes, it was.
We'll ask the council officers to separately measure that off the survey, the hard copy of the survey or electronically, and yes, we'll get that clarified.
Yes.
That's the official record of the widths anyway. But we do know that it was quite narrow, but we'll get that confirmed. Okay, any other questions for Juliet or about this application?
No, okay,
all right. Thank you very much. As I've said previously, we'll be discussing the items in the closed meeting and the results will be online within a week. Okay, our final item is item 8, DA 2021/0848, 42 College Street, Balmain, for alterations and additions to a dwelling at the ground and first floor, a new pool and tree removal. We have 3 speakers, an objector and 2 speakers for the applicant. Miss Nancy Wolquist is the registered objector speaker. There's a Nancy here we can see. Okay, thank you. Could you give us your name and address, please, and your 3 minutes will start.
Okay, my name's Nancy. I live at Nancy Wolquist. I live at 50 College Street, Balmain. My objection is that a plunge pool is to replace 3 mature trees. I think if the plunge pool was required for someone with a disability who needed the hydrotherapy or something, I might agree to it. But I at the moment, those trees are a very important part of the wildlife corridor that extends through this whole area here. It's very important that it stays there. I think if it was for something that was a really necessary improvement to the property, I might agree to it. But I just think with all the kids racing down the end of the street to jump in the water on a hot day here, it's not really something that should replace 3 mature trees. That's about it.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions for Nancy?
No, thanks.
Okay, then we have the applicant. We have Peter Maxwell, who I believe is the architect, and Ms. Emma Bull, who is the owner. Would we hear from Mr. Maxwell first? Is that the plan?
Sure.
Are you both here?
Yes, Peter is here.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and panel. My name is Peter Maxwell and I am the architect. I've been engaged by the owner of this site for the proposal. Council officers have recommended the DA to be approved subject to conditions, and while we generally support this recommendation, we ask the panel to adopt it with two minor changes. The first change is the deletion of recommended condition number 2A, which includes the removal of the trees. And that condition reads, the plunge pool is to be deleted and the trees are to be retained and protected. We request the panel does not adopt condition 2A and permits three existing trees within the courtyard on the site to be removed, and we provide these justifications. So the trees are very large. They are 16 metres, 24 metres and 30 metres high, and they're in the rear courtyard of the site. They're within 5.5 metres of the rear wall of the dwelling. And they're really huge and they're very close. They're in a cluster and they've really outgrown their environment. They're too small for this residential back garden and they dominate the space and they impact the potential for private recreation. They also create significant overshadowing to the subject site and also to neighbouring sites. They're directly north of the living room glazing to my client's site. Opportunities for natural light are reduced, thermal solar gain in passive design reduced, and energy generation through solar panels is also significantly reduced. The size of the trees is a big issue. It's a potential safety risk as well. So the trees could come down in a storm potentially, and that would be dire if that should happen. The other thing is that they drop significant amounts of debris, branches, sticks, leaves. It's a maintenance issue for roof gutters and a potential safety risk for residents and neighbours. And while we understand that litter is not generally grounds for removal, in this instance, the volume of debris is an unreasonable maintenance for the owners, and coupled with other issues, we think it should be considered. We'd also like to invite the panel members to come and see the trees for themselves because they are quite enormous and the proximity to the building is obvious on site. Just moving on to the second point, we'd also recommend the deletion of the condition number 2B, the first floor footprint, which reads upper level additions shall be designed so as not to result in a footprint within the main original roof form that is greater than existing. We recommend that the panel does not adopt this condition and permits the first floor level to be approved as per the architectural plans that have been submitted. We find that condition is ambiguous. The original roof form has been significantly amended. You can see that in the heritage report, the 1943 aerial of the site, and there's actually a little ridge at the top of the pyramid, which has since been replaced by a point and then an extending gable to the rear. We really haven't sought to change the existing front rooms upstairs, and so we submit that the minor extensions at the rear are really not visible from any public place, and they don't really have a detrimental impact either. They're well set back from the street, and it really stands as a it's a major part of the additions to the dwelling. And you know, if like the removal, so sorry, just to go back to it, we've got a first floor bedroom and a bathroom which requires partial demolition. So there's a veranda that under a gable roof at the rear. So we propose to demolish that. And then there's also a shed dormer, so a flat roof dormer on the eastern side, which is behind a gable dormer. And so we just propose to demolish the second dormer, the shed dormer behind, and just replace that with a new roof form, which will really strongly improve the internal amenity and the ceiling heights in the bathroom. We're not asking for high ceilings, we're just asking for standard room heights in those rooms. Thank you.
Okay. Do we have questions for Mr. Maxwell?
No, thanks, Madam Chair.
Yes. Mr. Maxwell, it's unusual to come to a panel and suggest that they ignore advice from courts about the the business of dropping of leaves and fruits from a tree is such that it should be removed. And I think that there was criticism of your tree report by the council, who said it managed to get some of the names of the trees incorrectly. The swimming pool or the plunge pool can be built on other parts of the backyard, can they not, without needing the trees to be removed?
That is true, yes.
Yes. And I think we'd all agree that really needs a better reason for removing trees than the need for a plunge pool, as somebody said, within close distance of other areas of water sports. With such fine trees, if they are dangerous, no doubt you can make an appropriate application to the council with an appropriate arborist support. Has the applicants considered doing that, or have they done that already and been refused? Removal of trees?
I do believe that has happened in the past, and it's also been rejected.
Right. Thank you.
Kath or John?
No questions, Chair. Thank you.
Just on the arborist report, there doesn't seem to be... We have a copy of it and it's in the papers, but there doesn't seem to be the trees plotted. You have plotted the trees next door, assuming we have the whole report.
There's a tree management plan, I believe, at the end of the report. Just scrolling through.
Do you have the council papers?
Yes.
So the very last page, 374.
Trees 1, 2, and 3 are shown sort of towards the bottom of the site.
Yeah, no, I was wanting to see, like you were saying, how close they were to the house and so on. But is there a survey that's maybe not in our papers that shows exactly where the trees are and the canopy and so on? Because it's not apparent in the arborist report where the trees are.
Yes, I can. Would you like me to share my screen with that?
Yes, do you have a survey? Sure, okay. Thank you.
Just bear with me a moment. So I found the drawing. I'm just going to share my screen now. This is actually the opposite orientation to the plan in your set. So just the trees are at the top of the site.
Oh, okay.
So the three trees near the stone wall up the top, they are the trees.
Right. So they're very close. Well, when you're on site, you can see that the canopies are very much intermingled.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, thank you.
That's okay.
And there's another condition 2C in the officer's report on page 297, refers to the fence. What was proposed to be, why were you removing the existing fence and what was being proposed in terms of the fence?
Yeah, so the existing fence, it is a timber paling fence. It's not in a good state of repair. So we proposed to replace it with a sort of wire fence, but actually a kind of a heritage wire fence.
Okay. When you say heritage wire fence, is there a drawing of that?
Just trying to see. It's a... Our front elevation shows a basic wire fence. There is a kind of a design at the top of the fence where there's little curved parts that all overlap with each other. We didn't show that on our elevation, but I mean, I could forward an image if that was required.
Okay. That were all my questions. Sorry, did anyone else have any other questions?
No, thanks.
We still haven't heard from Ms. Bull. Do you still wish to speak? Or are you there? I think she was registered to speak.
Madam Chair, yes, she is on the list. Okay. I saw her name, but she doesn't appear to be in the in the participants at the moment.
Okay. This is the last item. So do you know, Mr. Maxwell, if she wished to speak?
I'm actually just texting her now. She said she might be having trouble connecting.
Okay.
I actually have a... Oh, sorry. Can the chair... she's requested, can the chair unmute her? I think she might be the phone.
I don't have access, but the staff can, but I...
I believe she's the phone number of the...
Okay, I'll unmute.
Okay, thank you.
Hello.
Hello, hi.
Sorry, it's Emma.
Hi, were you able to hear our questions and just discussion with your architect? Okay. Did you have a separate discussion or presentation for us?
I do have a separate one, and I could also add to those questions, but we could do that after.
Okay.
I've just got a few things to add. So, yes, I'm Emma Bull. I'm the applicant on the DA and wanted to provide some context for your decisions today. A little bit about my family. We've got one daughter who goes to the John McMahon Council Childcare Centre. And to be clear, we're not renovating to sell or flip the house. It's very popular in the moment, but we're renovating to make our weatherboard into a functional, sustainable, livable forever home for our family. And in the past 5 years, when we've lived there, we've already invested heavily in the installation of 3.38 kilowatts of solar panels, underfloor insulation, water window coverings, water tanks, native beehive, worm farm, community street library for kids, etc. I provide this context to be clear that we did not apply for the tree removal flippantly. Two agitated individuals who have no knowledge of the trees or the site have led a very orchestrated and, by several reports, aggressive and bullying leafleting campaign against our development application. And I don't think that the panel should give much weight to objections submitted under somewhat coercive conditions. To be clear, we are applying to remove the trees because they are unsafe and unsuitable for the site. The three trees are 24, 30 and 16 metres high, less than half a metre apart from each other and 5 and a bit metres from my kitchen sink. They tower over our house and my office, and most worryingly, over the lawn where my daughter and our adopted greyhound play daily. The three huge trees drop large and heavy branches every day, and odds are one will fall on a person soon enough. The roots have caused sewage overflow and cracked pipes on 4 occasions in 5 years, resulting in a poo-covered backyard and over $20,000 in plumbing fees. When it's stormy and windy, which is a lot lately with the La Nina, I literally lay awake at night waiting for them to fall on us. They dominate and terrorise our lives on a daily basis. The council tree officer attended the site for not more than 10 minutes. No other site visits have been completed by this panel or by the objectors. And if you spend a few minutes looking up at the 30 metre high trees, you too will easily see at least a dozen branches of significant size and weight rubbing on each other, which will weaken their strength and lead to failure. You'll see evidence of 6 or more large branches, half a metre or more in diameter, which have already failed and fallen onto our property. I'm fully across the council's tree canopy goals, and as an expert in public policy and climate justice campaigning, I commend their ambition. But the policy should not and cannot rely on compromising safety and livability on private property. I'm asking the panel to consider a reasonable and practical solution here. We are very willing to work with council to replace the stored carbon, replace the plantings, enhance wildlife habitat on our property based on scientific landscape advice, which has suitable plantings for the site size. To reduce urban heat, we will have light coloured cladding and roofing on the extension, and we'll go well above and beyond any basics requirements. I really reiterate our request in the DA to approve the tree removal for the safety of my family. Thank you.
Thank you. Can I just make a comment that I have looked at the Arbeth report, and the reason for the tree removal is it doesn't go into any detail about the safety or the health or the structural integrity or otherwise of the trees. It just says that they're the plunge pool will be in the TPZ, so therefore they need to be removed. So I don't know, as Ms. Taylor has separately suggested, you should probably make a step if you want the trees removed and it doesn't happen as part of this application, that you need to consider making a separate well-argued argument to remove the trees for technical reasons?
Yeah. About 5 years ago when we first moved into the property, we had a development application for tree removal in, which was refused by council. They agreed to a pruning, I think, of about 10%.
Yeah, we could see there was a pruning approved, yeah. Okay, thank you. Any questions for Ms. Ball?
Through you, Chair, just no questions, but just a comment that this site was visited by myself and other members of the panel. And in my instance, obviously, look from both Church Street, College Street, and all around from the Royal, et cetera. So we note that the area, so it's important to note that we have visited all the locations, yours included.
That's true. I did go to both sides of the street.
But not onto the property itself.
No, we're unable to do that in current conditions.
Yeah. And just to an earlier comment about the pool location, there isn't another suitable spot on the site with the studio and the house. The position of the trees is where the only spot for a pool to go.
Okay, thank you. John?
Ms. Ball, presumably you have or you did prune after approval given from council. And I suppose my further question is pruning finally a solution, do you think, or is that not the way to head?
No, we didn't go ahead with the pruning due to cost restrictions and access across the back. And when we were planning to renovate, we thought we'd bundle all of those, the costs and the actions in together, which is where we are now.
Okay.
Pruning them wouldn't get us the light or the space that the architect also referred to, or I think affect the safety outcome for us.
Thanks, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you. Marilyn, any other questions?
Perfect.
Okay. Well, thank you, Ms. Bull. That actually concludes our speakers. Is anyone else here that wanted to speak, that didn't speak, that thinks they were going to speak? And any other item? No? Okay, so that this actually concludes the public meeting at 3:25 p.m. Thank you for everyone to participating. Thanks to the panel. We will now formally decide each matter in a closed session, and the results will be published on Council's website within 7 days. Thanks very much, everybody.